Hello and welcome to the first ever episode of Rural Voices, the Rural Youth Europe podcast. I'm Dan, a young farmer from Devon in England, and over the past few years I have loved attending Rural Youth Europe events and getting to know what this organisation is all about. I am so excited to be travelling to their events this year, hearing stories from young people all across Europe regarding the issues that matter to them. And it's my job to make sure these voices are heard. For the first event of the year, we are teaming up with the European Confederation of Youth Clubs for a study session on shrinking civil spaces. Here is a taster of what to expect in today's episode.
It's important for me because you are never quite prepared for this moment in which somebody trashes you on TV for something that you don't consider is deserved.
Someone tries to take my culture, cutting 60%, hovering over civil space like the vulture. Culture was once so free to be creative and not having to agree. Now there are grey men who only care for their politics, who need to be peddled by pen, hoping for a quick fix.
And we need government, we need the unions, young farmers clubs to really be pushing that message and to be saying, look, come on guys, let's get involved, let's be proud of farming, accept people's opinions.
You are listening to Rural Voices, the Rural Youth Europe podcast.
So I'm currently on the train in a tunnel 250 feet below the English Channel on my way to Strasbourg for the study session. I've been sent the info pack for the week and I'm just looking through it now. The week is entitled Shrinking Spaces for Civil Society. Now I'm not gonna lie, I have no idea what that means, but I've got a feeling that will soon change. What I do know is that we have around 30 participants from around 15 different countries, so it's going to be great to have open discussions between people from so many different backgrounds across Europe. Looking at the timetable, we've got sessions on building narratives, legislation, youth work. It looks like a packed programme and I can't wait to get started. I've got my anti-back hand cream with me at all times to fight off the coronavirus and I'm on my way. Right, people are starting to look at me, wondering why I'm talking to myself, so I'm going to leave it there. Next stop, Strasbourg. So I've arrived at the European Youth Centre here in Strasbourg and feel like now's a good time to catch up with one of the event organisers and a good friend of mine, Ellen. How's it going?
Oh, it's going great. Thank you, Dan. And it's really, really nice to have you here, finally.
Can you introduce yourself, where you are from, and a bit about your role here at the study session?
So I'm from Finland. My name is Elin, and I am the Secretary General for Rural Youth Europe.
Now, I kind of know what it's like to help organise an event like this. On a scale of 1 to 10, how stressed are you?
11. Yeah, it is part of it. Like, it's excitement and it's not a bad stress. You're not run down because for anyhow, we've been doing planning and preparing for a good time already. Basically, we applied this in April last year. So we have had 1 year to discuss and plan and know that this is coming up. So and then we even had a prep meeting in December. So we are prepped and we are here. And even if there's been some issues with, you know, people have not arrived because certain things going around in Europe and sneezes and stuff, and even the team got a bit shrunk down, we're still here and we're managing, and it's been really brilliant so far.
Yeah, I need to get some anti back on this.
Yes, you will.
Okay, so now we're at the end of day two here, and you've already seen quite a bit of open discussion about the topic of shrinking civil spaces and what that means to our different participants. Why was this topic chosen for this year's study session?
It's something that's affecting all of the countries in Europe, and I think a lot of our members actually have a very good idea of what it means, and we just need to sort of build on that knowledge through narratives and stories, because there's a lot of papers going around and there's a lot of political debates and discussion going about, but there's no one actually saying what it means in their case, or there are very few cases actually presented. And we thought that this is a great opportunity to bring forward those people who are affected by shrinking civil space and hear their stories and learn from them, and and also learning to recognize it in our society today, basically.
Now, by the end of the week, what do you hope that our participants would have got from the week?
I hope that they recognize the value in their own stories and in their own experiences. We have had some quite already heavy stories going around from countries which are really affected by this shrinking civil space and have been for a while already. But I hope that everyone goes home with the feeling that their story matters and that they have an impactful story and an impactful way of reacting to this situation, and hopefully it will empower them to actually do something about it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm not going to keep you any longer. Go grab a coffee, and I hope the rest of the week goes smoothly.
Thank you.
Now, if you were like me a few hours ago and thinking, what on earth do these people mean by shrinking civil spaces? Well, here's Raresh from the European Confederation of Youth Clubs explaining what we mean by a shrinking civil space.
So the shrinking of space for civil society is actors from civil society that are stopped from voicing their concerns, who are interfered to perform their role in society effectively. And it's very obvious concern in some countries like Belarus, Hungary, the Russian Federation, and in some countries it's not so obvious, but everyone has a problem right now related to this shrinking space of civil society. The way it manifests, it can be under different ways. It can be interfering, for instance, in internal affairs of certain NGOs. Probably the most classic example of shrinking civil space is what is known as the foreign agent law. So that certain organizations who are accessing foreign funding are considered as foreign agents, so enacting a foreign agenda because they received funds from outside of the country, and they are labeled. And then there's also countries in which there are campaigns against NGOs and civil societies in general, so like national TV campaigns about how NGOs are actually detached from the everyday realities, or labeled as either being lazy or being involved in money laundering. They're also associated with, for instance, careless spendings. You know, this is a lot. I think there were one or two cases in the UK, and now it's very difficult for an NGO. Everybody's super attentive to not be associated with this kind of careless spending. But actually, in the end, it's governments and national, regional, or local governments taking actions against civil society, restraining their field of activity and their capacity to operate and to achieve their goals. What is happening in this study session, and what we're trying to do, we are trying to cover something that maybe is missing when we talk about shrinking space for civil society. So the participants who are participating this week to this study session are actually trying to understand from each other what is like the reality in your country and how spread, how big is the impact or the effects, and how are you dealing with it, but also trying to put this in a personal story format. How is this affecting? How do I see my relation, my activity and civil society through this perspective of me being an actor in a shrinking, and if not shrinking, at least shifting space of civil society?
Thank you, Raresh, for that explanation. So it's at this point I'm going to hand over to our participants for some of those stories. As you know, here at the study session, they have been working on their own stories related to shrinking civil space. This might be something they can relate to from working in their own organisations, something a bit more personal, or just a general observation. Here's just a handful of some of the stories we have heard this week.
My name is Leonard Forsemans. I'm from Belgium, Flanders, and I have written a poem about the cultural budget cuts of the Minister of Culture in Belgium, specifically in Flanders. So, my culture. Someone tries to take my culture, cutting 60%, hovering over civil space like the vulture. Culture was once so free to be creative and not having to agree. Now there are grey men who only care for their politics, who need to be battled by pen, hoping for a quick fix. People are scared, especially the young, scared to be declared, their first note to be unsung. Civil space will not be affected. Volunteering will always prevail. But what of those rejected, those who will not be at will to tell their tale? You will not determine that. You will not determine that, the white man shouted, acting like an autocratic brat. This populist regime, caring for their own, limiting those who dream. We will kick them off their throne. Civil space needs to be protected. We will fight on until we have perfected, limiting that moron. The cultural budget has been declining continuously since 2009. Money for culture in Flanders dropped from 2.508 million euros, the lowest share in 20 years in the Flemish budget. The Minister for Culture, Jan Jambon, got 6% on all operating means. This has started from January 2020. The budget for project grants, resources for individual, often starting artists, dropped from 8.5 million to 3.4 million euros, a cut of 60%. This affects the smallest and most independent in the sector. Critical independent media sources see their grants of 500,000 euros from the Flemish journalistic grant drop to zero. Everyone has to save, the minister declared, except for politics, it seems. Plans to reshape the parliament with less politicians or downsize the ministerial cabinet have died in negotiations.
Hi everyone, my name is Deborah. I am the president of Youth Work Ireland and I'm here at the E6 study session and I want to tell everyone, I guess, a little bit about my story with shrinking civil space. So my story begins probably around 2 years ago when Youth Work Ireland decided to undertake a little campaign called Positive Sexual Health. To give a bit of context to why we wanted to undertake this campaign, I think it's important to include that for a long, long time, Ireland has been a very Catholic country, but recently it's become a lot more secular. But I think one thing that a lot of people don't realize is that a lot of our institutions still have a lot of Catholic ethos behind them. So like, for example, like 91% of all of our primary schools are controlled, are Catholic primary schools, which is kind of a shocking statistic when you think about it. So that kind of means that a lot of the socially acceptable norms within the Catholic Church have kind of leaked into our everyday lives in our societies. And it's kind of created a culture where sex is a lot more taboo than it is, I think, from our neighbors in the West in America, and then from our neighbors in the East in Central Europe, where I think sex is spoken about a little bit more freely. So through that kind of culture of like sex being something that's purely raunchy and scandalous and vulgar, it's kind of meant that sex isn't something that's spoken about at all. And then we kind of forget how important sex education is for literally everyone. So we decided to kind of undertake this campaign. And for us, it was really important to kind of create a sort of cultural change where talking about sex wasn't even something that was, that you would blink an eye at. Through our campaigning, through our advocacy work, the National Council for Curriculum and Assessment agreed to conduct a whole review of the current curriculum, which has been in place for over 20 years. Once they agreed to that review, we kind of saw that as our first big win, where we realized that we were actually making some positive headway. But one thing that was still a huge barrier is the fact that even though the NCCA was undergoing this big review and that they were absolutely open to creating a new curriculum, there's something called the Education Act in our curriculum or in our legislation that means that schools can opt out of teaching sex education based on their religious ethos. And if you remember the statistic that I mentioned earlier, it kind of, one cancels the other out. So we decided then that it was super important to start lobbying the government to remove this clause that would kind of even the playing field and make it so that every single school was teaching the same curriculum, the same as it would be for English, maths, history, geography. There needs to be uniformity across the board so you don't have kids in the west of the country leaving with an amazing sex education background and then kids in the Midlands feeling as if they haven't received anything. So that's kind of where we're at now. We have a petition where we are trying to gather as many signatures as possible. You can find it at youthworkireland.ie, and hopefully the government pay attention to us because we're not going to stop until we get what, not just what we want, but what the young people of Ireland have a right to. It is their human right that they receive quality education, quality healthcare, and those two kind of go hand in hand. So that's where we're at now. I think the thing that kind of came out of it, or something that I actually only realized once I came to this study session, is that the kind of negativity and the backlash we received was a very clear example of shrinking civil space, because we were doing something as an NGO that was given to us as our mandate by the young people that we serve. And yet we were having backlash and, you know, contrarians saying that what we were doing was wrong and it was unfounded and that we were trying to over-sexualize things and hyper-sexualize things. And the fact that we were, that there was attempts to silence us in what we were doing kind of made me realize that, wow, I guess freedom of speech isn't so free anymore. And then even for me personally, I was like heavily involved in the campaign, and obviously at such a young age, I was still in school at the time. So here I am talking about how sex ed in schools isn't good on national radio. And then I have, you know, people in my school community who are hearing this and then taking it as a personal attack towards the teachers in my school or the people who are in charge of sex ed curriculum where I go. But obviously, I'm representing my organization. I'm representing the views of the young people who have been consulted. I'm not speaking from a personal background. So the fact that I kind of faced a little bit of retribution for something that I'm so, so passionate about, and as a young person and as an activist, it's so, so important to me. And it was one of the first times where I realized that, wow, you know, I can do this and I can speak out against what I believe in and, you know, work to strive to change the world. But there's always going to be that, like, that little sad minority of society who will try and silence you. And it was super eye-opening for me. Not in the best of ways, because for a long time I was kind of super disheartened and I considered pulling out of the campaign and kind of like stepping back and maybe just focusing on schoolwork. But then I kind of had to realize that this is something I care so deeply about. And like one of the biggest driving forces for me whenever I think about the campaign, because even though the campaign started when I was kind of on the tail end of school, I always think back to my little brother who's only in his second year of secondary school, and I don't want him to graduate in 4 years and say, wow, I don't know anything about sex, because that is just so dangerous and so sad. So whenever I kind of get a little bit demotivated or a little bit deflated, I just try and always remember that it's not just my little brother who's going to miss out, it's thousands of kids across the island, and that's just not good enough.
My name is Eda Snen. I'm a refugee from Afghanistan, based in Italy, in Rome. I'm living there since 2007. I am co-founder and president of UNIR organization. It is a refugee-led organization, and it is for Italian National Union of Refugees and Exiles. We are established in 2019 in April, because after 2015 and big arrival of refugees in European continent, and especially refugees and asylum seekers that they were coming from Libya in Italian coast guards, the topic of refugees and asylum became the central topic in campaigns, public debates, political debates. So it became many organizations, they were speaking about refugees, many political parties, they were speaking about refugees, but there were no refugees in first, as a first person that they can speak, that they could speak for themselves. The result of this exclusion of refugees on a political level and also in those spaces that they can represent themselves made a negative image of refugees. So based on our opinion, that image does not represent refugees' real image. And for this reason, in order to change the narrative, our organization was established. Our main objective is that in any spaces related to refugees, there should be refugee in a as a first person that they can speak. And the second most important thing, in Italy we have an advisory board of civil society organization. It is called Tavolo Asilo, Asylum Table, and all members of this advisory table or civil society organizations or UN agency, but there is no member from refugee-led organizations. So our aim is also to get our space on that table. Otherwise, the refugees will be always they will be considered the passive category of society. And if refugees are leaders of their narrative, it also has impact on activities of other civil society organizations, and especially the people. They have campaigns, even now there are campaigns against asylum seekers and refugees, that they come here to commit crime, etc. There are like daily episodes of racism, especially with people from Africa and North Africa. If we have our space and the people, they see us and that we are active member of our host society, that we want to recompensate our host society, then the narrative will change from negative, that it is become like traditional and usual, from to a positive perspective, which is the fundamental and the basic objective of UNIR organization.
Right, so we're going to take a quick break from the stories and go back to our in-house expert, Raresh. Earlier, he mentioned how these personal stories are helping to fill a gap and provide what is missing in the research surrounding shrinking spaces for civil society. But now he's going to explain what research platforms are out there already and where to find more information.
There is not enough research and legislation is very slowly catching up. There is a committee of ministers recommendation from 2018 about the need to strengthen the space of participation for civil society. There is the Civicus monitoring instrument, which is actually an online platform where you can find stories, and they have research and they basically give a grade to certain countries. Also, the youth department of the Council of Europe has been doing work on this topic for quite some time, and we're also working within their work on this concept of shrinking civil space. And they've organized 2 years ago a consultative meeting, so they brought together actually NGOs, young people, youth NGOs, experts meaning researchers and people representing other bodies from the Council of Europe, like the Venice Commission or the Conference of INGOs. The European Youth Forum was also present. So in these consultative meetings, there were discussions, how is this affecting young people and their organization specifically, and they produced a very good compendium that you can find of the youth department if you look the compendium on shrinking civil space. And this is maybe one of the first instruments where somebody is putting together knowledge and trying to make it accessible for young people and their organization. And also the Conference of INGOs of the Council of Europe is doing work on this topic. They have an expert council on NGO law who has published a compendium of legal opinions and through the work that they do.
Thank you, Raresh. Right, let's hear some more stories from our participants.
I'm Mihaela Bidilica. I represent here Uzina Duzina, which roughly translates as a doesn't work initiatives in a factory. But my story is not necessarily related to my work now, but it is related to my work in the past 10 years in the civic sector. And for 7+ years, I've been working for a democracy organization in Northern Transylvania, which had as mission to present the vision and democratic credo of a Romanian dissident, perhaps the most famous dissident, Nicolae Ceaușescu. His name was Ion Rațiu. And in this, in our interest to preserve his democratic values, the foundation would present an award annually in Washington called the Ion Rațiu Democracy Award. Now, it so happened that once in this streak of awards to freedom fighters worldwide, we had a Romanian awardee, and I was managing communication for this award and considered it a wonderful opportunity for us to bring the award to Romania for once and actually have a festive celebration of changes in Romania towards democracy. So that was the initial plan. And it came with a lot of enthusiasm, but not necessarily with a lot of assessment. Since our awardee in 2018 was a Romanian judge that had been working on a grand corruption case against a Romanian politician and media mogul, who had a collaboration to the former Romanian Securitate, but also had a corruption case that led to his conviction. So she was the judge who ordered his arrest on the one hand, but the freezing of assets and recovery of the prejudice. So here we are, it's 2018. She had been on an on and off war with the Romanian society. She was kicked out of the magistracy twice. And in our enthusiasm, we had hoped to make this a celebration. First of all, we wanted to do it in our home city, Cluj-Napoca, since our interest was purely academic with this event. And we were very surprised that no institution in Cluj would want to host us. So we had this real moment of quest of, should we cancel the award? Should we go to Washington? What should we do? And we decided just to go bigger, and we went to the capital city, but with it came a lot of other aspects that we had not foreseen, because basically the TV station in question was based in Bucharest. Of course, all the important media was based in Bucharest, and especially a lot of interests were based in Bucharest that we were not necessarily aware of. So here comes the event. It starts with a protest of concerned citizens. It was also a protocol difficulty, because we had representatives of the main embassies present, we had academia present. In the judiciary world, people are quite divided. Some were against her. They didn't want to attend. They didn't want it to be in the university building. They considered it unfit for somebody who had been kicked out of the magistracy. But more so, media came, and with it, two smearing campaigns on national television, which were not necessarily directed against us, but of course we weren't mentioned. So that was that. So this is my story. It's important for me because you are never quite prepared for this moment in which somebody trashes you on TV for something that you don't consider is deserved. But I think what I would have liked then to know is that, first of all, you can leave it. So basically you can get out of it. And if it's with some feathers ruffled, then it's fine, because you can never give up. And it's basically, it proves your point that organizational work is important. And secondly, I would have liked at that time to have a better understanding of the framework, the legal framework around such campaigns, not to counter them, because we basically, you can't, as an organization, you can't compete with the television, but somehow to put them in the right perspective, and also put it in the right perspective within your organization, because my colleagues and myself were a bit scared. What is going to happen to us? Is it too much for us to take? Are we safe? But also to put it in the right perspective with also our families, because they would be worried, like, what is your job exactly? Is it, are you sure you understand it correctly? So I think at that time we were left with a lot of uncertainty, even on our decisions. But as time passes, you see there is no better option. I mean, you have to go forward and win some, lose some, learn some, I think.
So my name is Martin, and my story of the shrinking civil space is about how we reacted to the farmers' movements, and especially the German farmers' movements, because of the changes in EU law about fertilizing, animal well-being, and such stuff. I think last year it started that there was a big movement that formed itself, and they had really good points, because during all the last years there were more and more farms that had to close down, and that's not good for for young people to stay on the countryside when there is no work for them. So yeah, we could see that the points were quite good they had, and but on the other side, there were a lot of politicians and other organizations and movements having big criticizing them, because yeah, it's always this contrary thing, especially when you look at social media or all these fast judging journalism, that they want to have some sensational news and are fighting each other, although they could also discuss and get more like fact-based discussion, and yeah, maybe then we would have faster solutions. But this led us to the state that we, yeah, were not sure if we should state our opinion in this case, because we are quite good connected to all the ministries and so on in our country, and we also have a quite good accreditation in the public, I think. But on the same side, we also want to stand for the young people, and we saw that loads of them were on the streets and protesting. So we first made up the compromise that all our members and also like the board members and so on, they can decide themselves. And as a board member on the Rural Youth Organization, you already reach a little more people, but there was no conclusion from the organization itself and no some public press statement or something, because we were kind of afraid of the reactions, as we are all volunteers and we don't have time to discuss the whole day on social media or something. So this is kind of self-censorship in our society at the moment. It got much more hard. I think 10 years ago we wouldn't have thought about this so long, because through social media and all the other developments in public society, it's becoming more difficult to discuss.
Actually, my story has begun when I was born. It is too old, but I think it needs to be mentioned, because actually, since the moment that I was born, I know it's like a little bit cliche, but I know that something is different, assigned different in me. So I actually was born in a civil space that is already has shrunk for me because of my gender identity or sexual orientation or anything, that my lifestyle or something. I have realized that. But the things could continue until 2016, because I can leave at least hiding something. But after the coup in 2016, there has been a permanent changes in every individual's life in Turkey, and especially in me. And they were very permanent, actually. And after the coup, actually, my family has suffered a lot of because of the situation, because government did it. I think it was a total fake coup, and it was aiming to silence all the NGOs, all the people who are the opponents of the governments. And because of that, the advocacy of human rights has stopped a lot, because they closed a lot of NGOs or something. And my father has lost his job, and we have lost our social security. And at the same time, I was preparing for university exams, which is very critical for my life. And I was actually aiming very high points, very high exam scores or something. So I had to be mentally very strong to handle those process. But I had gained my aim, and I'm in university that I want to be right now. But that process was not easy for me, because there were a lot of things to handle with. But after while my father is in jail, he was in jail like 20 months. And while he was in there, I actually found the opportunity to meet people who are suffering also the injustice policies of my government. So when I heard them, when I heard their stories, I decided to do something, actually. And when I go to Istanbul to study, I actually got into SPOT, that is my organization names. They are working with both LGBTQ individuals and social policies. And I thought it is suitable for me. And when I got in there, actually things were not that easy that I was illustrating, because government was trying to stop us, and people are actually anti-LGBTQ movement. And actually with all of those, I felt that there is this space which are shrinking consciously, and I had to do something about it.
So we're now going to take another break from the stories. Here at the study session, we were very excited to welcome Anna Rucker, the president of the Conference of INGOs, one of the bodies of the Council of Europe. Ellen was able to catch up with her after meeting our participants.
You probably heard a few of our stories that's been going around here. Is there something that's triggered you in some way?
Yes, and one of them, it was the stories about migrant NGOs in Italy. This is also the important question, because who has the legitimacy to speak on behalf of who. And I think that it is important to have this always to this background to see who speak and why. But it's clear that what we should also undermine is this diversity of the different point of view that we can consider. Regarding the stories, I think it's important because in reality we speak about the shrinking civic space like the phenomenon, we speak about convention, mechanism of monitoring or what else, but in reality it means that human rights which are under pressure or concerned by this kind of impact.
So what's the Conference of International NGOs, where's the next steps? What's the plan with regards to shrinking civil space?
So we have, you know, in the Council of Europe, the things go forward, but very slowly. So since 2 years, we work with the DG2 on the new project, Freedom of Association, which in reality want to connect the input from the grassroots level regarding operation of the civil society with the Council of Europe standards. It's been met if we have the input or data from the member states, we can produce the legal opinion on the specific situation of the NGOs, and in the aim to avoid the strategic litigation. So it means that we want to really act in very preventive way before that litigation appears or start, to draw the attention. And the legal opinion, which will be drafted by our expert council NGO law, can be used also on the grassroots by NGOs, but also in Council of Europe to make the political dialogue and diplomatic dialogue with different stakeholders around the specific case of the NGOs.
Do you see that these stories then also connect to this? Like, would this be also a good,
of course,
support for this?
Of course, it means that we really go. The starting point is the specific case, mm-hmm, and the stories, not by individuals, but as NGO. And after then with our partner, so this is the methodology, we want to also have the background about the legal environment when the stories is situated. So always question of the shrinking civic space or Arabic environment should be analyzed, taking into account the context. Today, a lot of NGOs, when they feel that they are discriminated, they don't have the money to go to the court or to make litigation. They don't have capacity to do that. So these stories, it is the starting point of all case. You know?
My name is Ksenia Alineva. I represent Albania, and in the context of this session study of shrinking space for civil society, I would want to speak about situation for civil society organizations in Albania. Albania is a country with young democracy, and mainly organized civil society started to form from 1990, and for these 30 years it was done some work. In 2001 was placed law on non-profit organizations with definitions, principles and main rules on registration and functioning. Lately appeared some platforms for civil society and government dialogue, like National Council for Civil Society and Agency for the Support of Civil Society. But actually this platform works in a very uncoordinated manner. The lack of coordination among state institutions often negatively reflects on civil society organization participation in decision-making process and the efforts to improve policies. And some efforts have been made by the Albanian governments towards the improvement of legislation on civil society, but still civil society organizations facing too many obstacles for efficient functioning that affect day-to-day operation. Beginning from massive burden registration system, different requirements for functioning, sometimes requirements are the same for profit and non-profit organizations. And one of the main reasons is civil society organizations struggle to fund fundings. There are local and international funds. Local funds are very limited, and at present Albania is facing the situation one government creating pro-government NGOs and controlling all main funds in the country for supporting their policies and not allowing civil society to participate in policy-making processes and voice the concerns of communities. So you can always try to find international fundings, but international funding is not equally available to all organizations. There is a matter of a close network who operate around certain number of organizations inside the country and who benefit from that. But even if you manage to get funding from international organizations, ministries and local government authorities often create legal and administrative barriers for organizations which got an international funding in order to make it more difficult to have real impact. The fact that civil society is fully project-based and relies only on short-term funding is often reflected in the lack of sustainability of impact. We, as a think tank, focused on promotion best practices of good governance in private and public sector by fostering public debate on good governance and multi-stakeholder dialogue for better governance, assist the qualitative reformation on public sector, contributing better institutions serving to the citizens. And actually, we are constantly facing different obstacles on each stage of project implementation. For example, for the moment, we are working on implementing a novel approach for transparency in the measurement of local government's performance serving to the public interest. We faced major obstacles in two directions, crucial to bring forward the implementation of this initiative. On one side, it was really difficult to find funding from local donors because of high expected impact which this project would have in public opinion on realistically anchoring public perception on the poor quality of municipality governments when it came to serving citizens' needs. And state authorities were influencing local donors to channel funding towards pro-government NGOs. On the other side, after we managed to ensure funding from international organizations in support of municipal performance index, we are facing really hard time to obtain collaboration of local and central government in terms of sharing data and information with us related to key indicators of their performance. While working and after concluding the project, organizations also face problems with promotion of the results. Because of restrictions of free media, media sources are often depends from government, sometimes financially, sometimes they're a threat of repressions and intimidation. So it's hard also to make a promotion of the results in order to reach as more as possible audience. To conclude, I would want to tell that in the current Albania civil society situation, freedom to serve with a high loyalty and dedication to civil interest is shrinking every day more, endangering the ecosystem of civil society in the country. And the question is really acute to increase transparency, access to information, dialogue, consultation and cooperation between civil society organizations and government, and to enable a friendly environment, watchdog and advocacy active of civil society actors.
Hello, so I'm Sophie Davis from Wales Young Farmers Clubs. So my story is really based around agriculture, being a farmer's daughter, working in the industry and being part of Wales YFC. It's obviously something really, really important to me. Living in Wales, the UK right now, the B word is a big thing. Brexit, no prizes for guessing. Yeah, why it's so important. Obviously, it's changing our future framework, and it's really a platform for us in the UK now to, you know, really push the agricultural message, our high welfare standards, environmental good, and why farming, food and farming, it, you know, really is so important. You know, the food and drink sector is worth £6 billion to the Welsh economy, so it is really, really important we get this framework right. I would say the Brexit uncertainty has brought with it a more polarised society. And, you know, that's what, that very much leads into, you know, questions with the future framework, how it's going to work, etc. People are now more concerned than ever into where their food comes from, how it's produced. It's really, really sad to see some of the more extreme sides of the coin to that. So by that, I'm talking about your vegan activists, your animal activists.
now, you know, logging into, you know, social media, it's fantastic. We can connect with people from the click of a button on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, whatever platform it is. It's difficult because farming isn't a job, it's a lifestyle, it's a way of life. And you're seeing farmers posting on social media or talking about it in the press or anything like that, just about their day job, and getting attacked by it for that. And it really is heartbreaking to see. Mental health has gained more prominence than ever in the ag industry. Over 80% of farmers under the age of 40 see mental health as a high priority. But some of these damning comments are just completely destroying the industry and destroying the confidence of farmers. A perfect example is I baked a quiche and I was very proud of my Welsh and British produce I'd used to bake that quiche. So I posted it on Twitter. Just for posting that tweet alone, I was called a murderer, a rapist, and I deserved to die. I was a disgrace. You're seeing friends, colleagues in the industry as well, you know, posting pictures of their beautiful landscapes, that they're enhancing the environment, producing food to the highest standards, yet they're being called also these terribly vile things, which is, yeah, knocking the confidence of the people of industry. And it is, you know, the F word is now, maybe I'm too embarrassed to say, I'm a farmer, when we shouldn't be that. You know, everyone has the right to voice their opinion. Everyone has a platform they can speak of. You know, it's so important, part of democracy. If we do not keep to our key founding principles of a democracy, which is respect, you know, tolerance, and obviously being open-minded, then, you know, where is this going to end up? The BBC as well has arguably been incredibly controversial in not supporting the farming agenda. In my opinion, you know, there's been documentaries recently, as you know, BBC is a public broadcaster, and the unbiased practices in some of these documentaries, you know, basically putting these documentaries out using American farming systems, but not telling the audience that these are American farming systems they're using. And then people are going, oh, that's terrible, they're producing food like this, oh, it's awful. Oh, the land could be used more for crop production. Well, actually, it's over 70% of land in Wales you can't actually use for anything but livestock grazing due to the fact we're less favoured area, LFA. So it's impossible. But that thing, the audience aren't gonna know that, and that's spreading that by fake news and not making that clear, then pushes the agenda down further. So there really needs to be balance by all opinion. You know, I wouldn't be in a position, if someone came up to me now and said, why don't you speak about Ireland, tell me how wonderful Ireland is, well, as a person from Wales, I would not be in a position to do that. I'd get my wonderful colleague Rasheen, who is on the course, who is from Ireland, to speak about it. Likewise, if you're going to make a programme about farming, you must include farmers. So, you know, it's really, really, really crucially important at this time that, you know, everyone gets a fair say in society, and we need government, we need the unions, young farmers clubs to really be pushing that message and to be saying, look, come on guys, let's get involved, let's be proud of farming, accept people's opinions. If someone wants to be a vegan, fantastic. If they want to be a vegetarian, fantastic. If they want to be one of the 98% that have red meat and dairy as part of a healthy lifestyle, fantastic. But it's about being accepting of those views, not using extremist hurtful language, and to be kind.
Well, hello, my name is Leonie Martin. I'm here at the study session on behalf of the Advisory Council on Youth at the Council of Europe. Council of Europe obviously not being the European Union, but a wider international organization. And in this organization, there's this Advisory Council on Youth, where representatives of youth organizations, 30 to be precise, are put on the same level as representatives of the national ministries. And together, we work on setting standards across Europe in youth policy. And this happens with recommendations or trying to figure out how to use funding for the European Youth Foundation, for instance, but also trying to understand how we can sort of mainstream youth policy, the interests of young people in other parts of the Council of Europe. Because in the end, what interests us as young people is not just trainings and making sure this all works and that there are nice youth centers that work, but it's also just general issues, and the Council of Europe as such is an international organization working on rule of law, on human rights, freedom in Europe. And as such, we're also now looking at the topic of your study session, which is shrinking civic space, because this affects us, well, just as other organizations, but I'd actually argue it affects us more because we're put in a more vulnerable situation, sometimes also not understanding that this is actually happening to us. I've been active in a youth organization that works for democracy in Europe. It's nonpartisan, it's called JEF, Young European Federalist. And as such, we have several cases where member organizations have been attacked, have been put under pressure. There have been smear campaigns, for instance, where also easy things happened. Like you have a seminar planned, you're very excited for it, you have content planned, and suddenly the venue cancels. And it's not perhaps because someone says so in government, but it's because the business owner is just afraid, him or herself, that by accepting us or accepting a youth organization that says something on a specific topic, that they all get repercussions. So this is there's a certain self-censorship that happens, because when it happens to them, they're a bit confused as to why this happens to them and how they should react. And sometimes people just naturally want to save themselves. And I think it's important for us to understand that we're actually pieces of a bigger puzzle in this. And it's happening in very different ways across Europe. And I think it's really important to point out that young people are really vulnerable in this. So it's already good. I know the Council of Europe has already adopted a position on a shrinking civic space. Mm-hmm. But I think we really need to point out young people are young. That means we have less life experience. We do not know as well as other people how to fill in forms, how to deal with administrative burdens, financial stuff. If you add more and more of this, and we have seen a lot of changes in association laws across Europe, for instance, or when it comes to reporting for grants, this just makes it difficult. And then it's just easier for a person to say, like, you know what, I think I'm not just gonna participate, or I don't get funding because doing so I will be too political. You don't get a room because you're too political. Like, that's obviously also silences other people. There have been situations where suddenly other organizations pop up that are a bit like yours, but they don't talk on content, for instance. And that, you know, could drive away members. So these are different cases where we just need to realize, like, this is an ongoing trend, and we sort of need to understand how to tackle that together.
So there we are. We have heard from just some of the participants that have been here this week on the study session with their own stories regarding shrinking spaces for civil society. We hope that everyone who is now on their way home feels like they know so much more about the topic, feel inspired, and see themselves as agents of change across Europe. And that brings us to the end of our first episode of Rural Voices. Please feel free to share it far and wide, and of course, make sure you subscribe so that you don't miss out on future episodes. In just a few weeks' time, we will be travelling to Slovenia for our grand prep meeting for this summer's rally. I cannot wait to find out what the team have planned. In the meantime, to keep in touch with all things Rural Youth Europe, make sure you follow us on Instagram and Facebook. Right, I've got a train to catch. I will see you next in Slovenia.
You are listening to Rural Voices, the Rural Youth Europe podcast.